So, greetings and welcome to everybody. And so to continue the Bodhicaya Avatara, eighth chapter, stanza number 34. Until the time comes round when four men carry me away amid the grief of worldly folk, till then I will away and go into the forest. You know, of course, this is, talking from a monk's point of view. You know, Shantideva became a monk, and although he was a prince, but he saw the meaninglessness, the fatality of ruling a kingdom. That he would not be able to help in a really big way, in a true way, lots of people, and he will himself will be compelled to do lots of negative things as well, in order to hold his power and, you know, do his duty of a king. And that would not benefit him in the long run, in a deep way. That will not benefit anybody else in a deep way. So therefore he renounced and went into the forest. And then he became a monk, and he studied and practiced, and then became a great master. Of course, after that, then he did lots of things which, you know, was not always in the forest. He was even one time became a general, a general of a country, and he really, you know, made peace, and, you know, it became one of the most powerful, strong, secure, and peaceful country. But then some of ministers who were jealous of him complained to the king that, you know, this general of yours is a fake general, he's not good. You look, he doesn't actually have a sword, he has a wooden sword. He doesn't have a real sword, and how can he be a general when he doesn't even have a sword? So then King got doubtful, and he went and asked Shantideva to show his sword. And Shantideva, I mean, his sword was sword of wisdom in a way. It was, I think, mostly a wooden thing, but, you know, it was a sword of wisdom, a miraculous kind of a sword. So he said, no, I think it's not good that I show you the sword. And the king said, no, no, you must show me the sword, I command you. And then he said, in that case, then you must close one of your eyes so that, you know, you can see it, your eye doesn't get burnt. So the king was a little bit not happy, and he said, okay, now show me. So he kind of took his sword out of his sheath. And there was so much light, so much radiation from that sword, that the king's one eye became almost blinded, you know. He couldn't, because he was, it was so strong light that they just, no, get it back, put it back. And then he put it back. And then, so he was like that. But anyway, so therefore, you know, as a monk, as a true Dhamma practitioner, as, you know, a practitioner who wants to spend full time on Dhamma practice, then this should be the way, you know. I think I told, because many of us who are supposed to be monks, we are too busy, you know, and we think we are too busy. We are so busy to do things and to travel and to teach and to, you know, do this and do that. It's supposed to be for the Dhamma, supposed to be for the people, but actually we become so busy that we many times think that I don't have time to practice Dhamma. And this, you know, Siddha Rinpoche once told us that those monks who say that they have no time to practice Dhamma, he feels like laughing, you know, he feels really funny. Because if you are a monk, you are supposed to have all the time to practice Dhamma, and when you say you have no time for Dhamma practice, then what is your time for, you know? What do you do? You know, that's supposed to be all your time. So this happens often. So therefore he talks about this. So until time comes around when, you know, in India when a person dies, the same day, actually the same day, because in India is a hot country and you cannot keep the dead body long, same day, then, you know, the body is put kind of tied up to on a kind of a palanquin with two bamboo sticks, and then four men will take them on their shoulders and carry them near the river and then burn them. So that's why that's talking, until the time comes around when four men carry me away amid the griefs of worldly folk, then all your families and friends, they are grieving, they are mourning, they are crying, very unhappy. You know, this happens all the time. So what he's saying here is, until I die, you know, from now until I die, I would like to go into the forest. Means, what do you mean by forest? It's not necessarily just staying in the forest, but would like to devote my time to completely, concentrate on transforming myself and, if possible, become a fully realized being. And then I would have done the best, the most purposeful and most meaningful thing for myself, and also I would have done the most helpful thing for other people, because then I can really help people. It's not just like now we try to help but we really don't know exactly how much we are helping, and sometimes we would be even harming because we are not wise enough and we don't really know what is happening by what we do or we try to do. So therefore that would be the greatest help if we become enlightened, because then I can not only do greatest help to the people around me, but I will become somebody who will only help, you know, and great help to all the beings, you know, throughout the time. So therefore, you know, I will always go into the forest. And what happens in the forest? They are with no befriending or begrudging. I will stay alone in solitude, considered from the outset as already dead. Thus, when I die, a source of pain to none. So when I go into the forest, into the solitude, you know, without too much worldly contacts, then, you know, there is no, not too much like people who are too much attached to me, or that I am attached to them too much. And therefore, also, and because of that, there is nobody who would be grudging against me. You know, because anybody who actually becomes grudging or having problems or having difficulties with me, an issue with me, started being close to me and being kind of friend or relative or, you know. So therefore, if I am in solitude, I don't have anybody who is to whom I am totally attached, but those people who are not attached to me, and therefore no enemies and not anybody with whom or to whom I've created any problems. So I will stay alone in solitude, considered from the outside as already dead, thus when I die a source of pain to none. So when I'm in that kind of a complete solitude and kind of lifelong retreat, then for most people, you know, since I'm out of sight and out of mind, so therefore I'm more or less treated like already dead. And when somebody is treated as already dead, so therefore even if I die, there will be not many people who would really, you know, be so sad or so much unhappy and so much become painful to them, because they are not dependent on me. There will be nobody who would be dependent on me, so I would, my disappearing or my dying would not pain, not giving too much pain to lots of people. Then this is 36. There will be no one standing by in tears and mourning, thus to trouble me. And no one will be there distracting me from thinking of the Buddha and the practice. So therefore, you know, there is nobody who is standing near me and mourning and wailing and, you know, and crying, and so, you know, and so therefore I don't have to be, you know, I don't have to be attached to them. I don't have to be, you know, in pain for other people who are in pain because of my dying. And so therefore, you know, my mind will not be distracted by focusing on only the right thing, you know, and on the Buddha, on the Dharma, on my practice, you know, nobody is going to distract me from that, my practice. So these three stanzas, I will read the Tibetan.
Jite kunne nojindu, chese shibu yeyine, delu tena matepa desu tena nodusu. Hime kuenbao meyeshine, lundu jibu venit, ngani hedon ratzina hanao nyange sepame. Tonan kuepa soda cho nyange nuepa semepe, dei sonji jiren su suju, iwan jiwa meyes. After that, then the another stanza. Devishindu nongkawe natsa tsechung deshi jing, ima tangche shijepa danyi jibu nebar shahas.
The This is 37. Therefore, in these lovely gleaming woods, with joy that's mired, that's marred by few concerns, where mental wandering will cease, I will remain in blissful solitude. Therefore, in this kind of talking about the forest, you know, lovely gleaming woods with branches and leaves kind of gleaming, you know, in spring, it is fresh and green and things like that, and then slowly it becomes more kind of mature and nice weather and all kind of different flowers and fruits come and all these things, and then slowly it becomes yellow and red, and it is so beautiful. And then, the leaves shed, and then it will be winter, and then the sun comes through this woods, and then the four seasons change, and you will see wild animals, you will see flowers, and waters, rivers or brooks kind of running, and there's nobody disturb you. You can make your mind completely free, completely peaceful and joyful, and and at the same time you can transform yourself. You can become very compassionate, you can work on your wisdom and compassion, and so through that you can also help lots of people, not necessarily only human beings, but lots of other beings, and then if you are really, your mind is really transformed, then whether you are staying in the forest and in solitude, or whether you are the people, you are in kind of solitude. So therefore, you are actually, if your compassion becomes really, really great, and your wisdom becomes great, then, whether you are staying in the solitude or otherwise, you will be helping lots of people. But even if you don't become that, that great, or that that transformed, or that progressed, you will remain peaceful, joyful, accumulate lots of positive actions and positive deeds, and make lots of dedications, so that you sow the seed, gain the strength and power to be able to, help, billions of beings, sooner or later, and then, it will become, I will remain in blissful solitude. Maybe in this life I do nothing kind of with the people around me, but that doesn't mean that, the next time I come, I can be much, much more stronger, much more. It's not like, helping two or three people, or, 50 or 100 people, little bit, and that also I don't know whether I'm helping or harming. Not like that, but then I can really help thousands and hundreds of thousands and billions of beings, that just by seeing me, lots of people get benefit and, liberated and things like that. So therefore, being in solitude is not necessarily that you can't help people. Sometimes being in solitude, you can actually help more, stronger, because you don't know, you don't know the power of the mind and power of the people. Sometimes, great beings who are staying in the solitude, in the mountains, in the caves, in the forest, not seeing anybody with their, you know, with their power of mind, with their power of a positive, you know, kind of energy, they could be sometimes doing so many, so much to actually help, transform the society, transform the environment, transform, you know, lots of things. So therefore, you actually can't say how much someone is helping or not helping. So therefore, you know, that's how it is. So I think I stop here. 34 to 37. Thank you.